The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt from Studio North. Last night, just after I finished being on Special Report with Mike Emanuel, sitting in for the vacationing Brett Baer, we learned during that program that former President Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago had been raided by the FBI, searched pursuant to a warrant, of course, not illegal search yet, as far as we know. I talked about it on Fox, but then Senator Lindsey Graham and I sat down to converse about it and the IRS Expansion Act shortly thereafter. Here is that interview. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I have got to tell you, last night on Special Report, I had to transition mid-segment talking to Mike and the panel about the what I call the IRS Expansion Act. And all of a sudden, President Trump sends out the message his FBI Mar-a-Lago house is being raided. So catching up with Lindsey Graham this morning, our friend from South Carolina, senior senator from South Carolina, I think I'm going to go in reverse order because I want to spend the most time on that horrendous thing that came out of your body on Sunday, the Senate passing an unprecedented expansion of the IRS. But have you got any reaction? You probably haven't seen the subpoena or the warrant or anything else yet on the president, but no former president has ever had that done to them, have they, Senator Graham?
No, not that I know of, you know. Not that I know of, and all I can say is this is we're a nation of laws. Nobody's above the law, that's for darn sure. But the pressure on DOJ from the liberals to get Trump has been unrelenting. The pressure on the attorney general to do something has been just incredible, and we'll see what happens here. But I'll be very suspicious. Remember, they've been trying to get Trump from since he came down the escalator. The Russia thing was a bunch of garbage. We all saw January 6th unfold in front of us, Biden's president, and we'll see what happens. But this is dangerous territory for the Department of Justice.
Oh, very, very dangerous territory for reasons related to constitutional law, which I'll go into at length. But let's stay focused on a moment on the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which is a triple lie. It's got nothing to do with inflation. It does not reduce any spending. And it's not an act, it's a retreat by Joe Manchin. The end of the day, how do you assess what happened, Senator Graham?
Well, I think for the American public, it's going to make every problem worse. How many people think we need a new gas tax? Well, if you think that, you probably shouldn't be driving to begin with because you're dangerous. Right. The bottom line is there's a new gas tax an issue, a 16.4 cents per barrel new tax on all imported oil and domestic crude refined at an American refinery, which makes our refineries less competitive. So gas tax is going to go up. Pennies become dimes and dimes become dollars. The 15% minimum tax will destroy investment. In 2017, we had a provision to allow companies who bought equipment, expand their business to expense that cost in a single year for tax purposes. It led to boom growth, and that was repealed. And that's where the money comes from, the minimum tax. Is eliminating the expensing provisions, and 87,000 people being hired by the IRS is not good news for you. If you believe they're coming just after the rich, you're crazy.
Yeah, I wrote a column about it. It'll come out later in the Washington Post today.
Good.
And I had to go through the fact checking hurdles because that's probably a talking point. We had to go round and round. It actually goes back to the president's own introduction of his original $7 trillion ambition, where they said they would double the size. So it's not made up. You guys aren't making this up for talking point. They really are going to double the size of the IRS and hire 87,000 new people. How do they think they're going to do in the election on that?
Well, I think it's going to backfire. I think higher gas prices is going to be a result of a war on American fossil fuels, a new gas tax on a imported oil and American crude refined in America will drive up gas prices. But there's a lot of efforts to take off the table exploration credits, $45 billion in new taxes on American energy companies But back to the IRS. It's bigger than the British Army. There are 81,000 people in the British Army. There's going to be 87,000 new agents at the IRS over a 10-year period. 53% of the people working for the IRS today are still working from home. So how do we fight this? It's a 10-year build-out, right?
Yep.
So if we take back the House and the Senate in November, which I think we could, we should not pass any appropriation bill to fund the government that authorizes this expansion. I'm going to introduce legislation to roll this back, to direct this money to better purposes, like starting with border security.
Now, Senator, I think Joe Manchin must have gotten a sweetheart deal somewhere along the way, because there's nothing in this that makes sense to me from his perspective. Senator Sinema, I couldn't figure out in 1,000 years in a crossword puzzle. But you tell me, what did Senator Manchin get?
Well, he got a promise that if he would empower this expansion of government, if he would vote for this massive tax increase, this assault on green, American energy, the coal association of West Virginia slammed him because they said what he passed was would hurt coal production in America. What did he get? Supposedly, he got a promise down the road that there'd be some regulatory reform in terms of energy production and some assistance to build a pipeline in West Virginia. That's what supposedly he got. Well, how does he get this? When we fund the government at the end of September, we'll have to do something to keep the government running. A continuing resolution will be offered, and apparently they're going to put all the goodies for Joe, and some of it I will actually agree with, on the CR to pay him back. Over my dead body, will I vote for a continuing resolution that is a political payback scheme? And if you're going to give him energy regulatory relief, I've got a bunch of ideas in South Carolina. This will never happen. I've told him to his face it wouldn't happen. It was a pretty dumb thing to do, in my view.
Well, if he gets something for West Virginia, Ohio's next door. Don't Rob Portman and Sherrod Brown get something?
Well, I'll tell you this. To every Republican out there, I want to fund the government. I don't want a government shutdown. Why don't we do one of two things? All of us get something. I've got some things I need in South Carolina on the energy side that would help my state. All of us get something. All boats rise. Or we just do a clean CR where we just fund the government at current levels and try to pass appropriation bills in the lame duck. What I want to let people know on our side is if we give into this, if we allow reconciliation to be used in a fashion like it was, and the payoff comes through a continuing resolution, we're eroding the way the Senate operates. And I'm hoping no Republican will give into this because it makes no sense. And it will incentivize, I think, all the bad things about politics.
Well, the Votorama went pretty well by my I was very much a pessimist because messaging is usually pretty bad. But the press conference that you and Senator Thune and I believe Senator Barrasso, a couple others did on Friday was actually the best messaging I've seen in a long time. Actually, it's also very funny about it was likelier that the Taliban didn't know that Zawahiri was in Kabul than this reduces inflation. But beside being funny, it was pointed. You stayed on point. Will the Republicans coordinate their messaging into November?
And well, absolutely. You know, sometimes, you know, songs write themselves. this writes itself. Okay. You got to remember, the first thing I did at the news conference was remind you these are the same people that told you in March of 2021 the American Rescue Plan would double the economy. Well, in March 2021, inflation was 2.6%. It's 9% now. What happened between March and now? The American Rescue Plan became the American Recession Plan. It flooded the zone with new spending and new taxes. It hurt economic growth. This effort to declare war on American fossil fuels was part of the American Rescue Plan. So the people who promised you the American Rescue Plan would help you don't know what they're talking about. The same thing they're saying about this bill is going to happen. It's not going to make things better. It's going to make things worse. So start with the idea that the people who are telling you this, you shouldn't trust after March of 2021. And if you think new gas taxes will help the American economy, again, you probably shouldn't have a car.
Well, they think they won. Now, I think it's an own goal. And they've got a new meme out there called Dark Brandon, hashtag Dark Brandon. And they've got the president with his sunglasses and laser eye. This is not a win. You cannot have every Democrat. They got to pass this in the House, right? So all of these House Democrats, you were in the House once. You know how hard these elections can be after redistricting. Sure. Do you think they want to campaign on a doubled IRS on 87,000 new IRS people?
Well, it depends. Remember back in the 90s, I walked off the cliff for Bill Clinton with the energy tax. It depends on what your job, how you view your job. If your job, to be a team player to the Democratic Party, to the detriment of your district, then they'll go forward. But if you view your job to be honest with your constituents, if you don't believe me, just ask Bernie Sanders, CBO, and Penn Wharton Economic School. They all say the same thing. This won't reduce inflation. It may be the only time in history that all three of those people say the same thing.
Stop right there. We're going to come back with more of my conversation from last night. We return to the raid on President Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago with Senator Lindsey Graham, who is ranking member on Senate Judiciary Committee, I believe, right after this. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt. I talked to Lindsey Graham last night, and we're going to come back to the Mar-a-Lago raid by President Trump at the conclusion of this. But we're talking about, and we were talking about last night, the IRS Expansion Act that adds 87,000 IRS agents to the IRS doubles the size of the budget of the most feared agency in government. Let's continue the interview.
So this is not going to reduce inflation. It will increase gas prices. And go sell to your constituents. Now's a good time to increase the IRS sixfold at the expense of other things in our government.
Now let me ask you, Senator, in terms of Robert Byrd versus Joe Manchin, if Robert Byrd had passed the bill that just passed, the 87 IRS agents would be taking up offices in West Virginia. Is there anything like that in this bill?
Not that I know of. And, you know, listen, I've been on your show praising Joe for keeping the filibuster intact. Listen, I worked on a bipartisan infrastructure bill that I thought made sense. I worked on the CHIPS Act that was probably too expensive, but it still made sense. Try to develop chips that we need for our military and domestic consumption in America, not rely on China and other places. So it's not like I can't work with a guy. Here's what happened. This is the same Joe Manchin who voted with the Democrats in March of 2021. Just imagine every Republican voted no. What does that tell you? Susan Collins, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, all of us saw this bill as being hurtful to the economy. And Joe Manchin was wrong in 2021. He's wrong now. And I think he's done a lot of damage to the people in West Virginia. That's at least what the goal will say.
Stop it right there, would you? I'm going to come back to that. The raid on Mar-a-Lago, that is the number one thing today. Now, I'm here to tell you, yes, former presidents can be subject to legal process, especially federal criminal process. All you have to read is Trump v. Vance, a Supreme Court case of 2020, and you'll get all that you need. But it has shaken the political world completely, and it has energized the Republicans who point to the long, long history of Get Trump. And, you know, I, as Senator Graham and I will discuss, we both agree with and disagree with the president on many things. I don't know if this is about the handling of classified documents. I just don't believe that. That's not how we did it. When the National Archives and Record Administration came to me as head of the Nixon Foundation and said, we think there are classified documents from President Nixon's post-presidency year, probably relating to memos he sent to and received back from the occupants of the White House about China. I'm not sure what they were. They just said, we found some and we have to take them, but release the rest of our documents. We got it worked out, and it was all done by phone and letter and expedited processing and handling by people with classifications, and they did it. And I just don't believe that. This is not what you do with presidents who've got documents with them. And by the way, Sandy Berger, other people have been pursued for taking out documents when they were in the White House trying to exonerate people. But Hillary Clinton deleted thousands and thousands of emails without anyone reviewing them. No criminal process. No criminal process against any former president, any former presidential candidate, because it calls into question the nonpartisan nature of our justice system at the federal and state level. That's the real problem here. And we're going to have to work through this. And boy, are people ticked off. And they are not all just Trump lovers. There are a lot of people who say this is taking the Republican to dangerous territory, as you'll hear Lindsey Graham say when we come back. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Last night, President Trump's residence, former President Trump's residence, Mar-a-Lago, was subjected to a thorough search, including the evident opening of his safe and the seizure of papers and all the kind of stuff that goes with an FBI raid. Some in the left wing are objecting the term raid. That's what we've always called these things, a raid. I talked about it with Lindsey Graham last night about 7:15. Here's the rest of that conversation. Let me close by going back to the raid on Mar-a-Lago. And details are not going to be clear for a day or so. But you get Merrick Garland in front of you, don't you, on Judiciary pretty soon?
Yeah, we just, we have oversight. And we had the FBI director there a few days ago. And here's what's playing out here. Okay. So the same FBI agent that was involved in Crossfire Hurricane, the FBI analyst for Crossfire Hurricane, who never gave any indication the Steele dossier was not worthy of respect, who knew about the Russian subsource disavowal of the document, never, kept supporting the warrant application. That same guy was sitting on the Hunter Biden investigation that basically, put a lid on it. So the FBI has got a problem with a conservative world to begin with. All I can say is nobody's above the law. None of us, but the politics around getting Trump have been going on so long and so often that we're talking about constitutional principles here. This is a dangerous moment for the American Constitution. We'll see how this plays out.
Let me come back with one last question, Senator. I have here my constitutional law casebook, which I use every year when I teach con law. It's by Randy Barnett and Josh Blackman. In it is Brandenburg versus Ohio, which holds you must have the present intent and the present ability to cause violence in order to be charged with a violent act as a result of speech. The president gave a speech. Even if you take the worst view of that speech and you say he really wanted violence, it doesn't pass the Brandenburg test. So they can't get him on assault. They have to get him on a seditious conspiracy. Honest to goodness, are they going to try and make that fly? Do they really think?
Number one, I'd hate to have to prove that Donald Trump conspired with anybody about anything. That means you got to have a plan and stick with it. Good luck. So that's not his strong suit. So he's a good president, but that's not his strong suit. So the bottom line here is that the Brandenburg decision says political speech is among the most protected speech, right?
Yes.
So all politicians say inflammatory things, but the January 6th committee has become a joke because nobody's asked the question, what about the people who came to Washington the night before the speech with violent intent? What about the guy that planted bombs before Trump ever gave the speech? So the bottom line here is we're getting in some very dangerous territory. The transfer of power did occur, and everybody saw what happened on January 6th. It was a sad day for America, and I'm glad people who participated in the violence and are being held accountable legally. But at the politician speaking to crowds, that is a tough test in terms of liability for actions of others. And as you said, this conspiratorial approach, just be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Will it make the president stronger politically to persecute him or prosecute him?
Listen, this guy, he's been most blessed person in the world in terms of his enemies. He's done some, things that you and I don't agree with, but his enemies have been so relentless, have lied so much, have manufactured so much over time that I do believe that Republicans particularly have become suspicious of the legal system in America, used more often as a political tool than it should be. It depends on what they find. It depends on what they're pursuing. But the desire to get Trump and the pressure to get Trump is unbelievable and unrelenting. This could be a very dangerous moment for the American Constitution. We'll see where this goes.
Senator Lindsey Graham, thank you for joining me. Much appreciated. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by David M. Drucker. Follow him on Twitter at David M. Drucker, chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner. David, your reaction to what we've learned thus far about the raid on Mar-a-Lago?
Well, I don't think we know enough for me to have a real competent reaction. I mean, there are the political implications, but even the political implications so far are in reaction to something that, we don't know enough about. And so on the one hand, we could in theory find out this was completely justified and makes a lot of sense, despite how unusual it is. Or we could find out it doesn't. But I would predict that no matter what we find out, everybody's going to revert to their corner and conclude that they either like what they hear or don't believe what they hear. And I would say as a matter of the midterm election, yeah, the match to begin with, they're going to win the House majority because at the very least, the Democrats are defending a five-seat majority that's so thin it's impossible to defend. And even though the Senate races have looked tougher for Republicans in the summer, as I, you know, been saying recently, we've seen this movie before, at least in the 21st century with wave elections, where it starts out okay for the party in the White House, then it looks really, really bad for a long time, then it looks like, wait, maybe it's not so bad, and then it all goes the way it looked like it was going to go, especially when you look at the states where Republicans are on offense or even where they're playing defense. So we need to know more before I can tell you, okay, this is the potential different impact, but I don't think we know enough.
Assume for a moment that we won't know anything more than we do now, except that they have a warrant alleging misappropriation of classified materials, which is what's been leaked as their cover story. And say that's where it sticks for 10 weeks. They don't get Ray in front of a committee. They don't get Merrick Garland. If they do, they say it's part of an ongoing investigation. We can't comment on it. White House sticks to its dummied up beetle role that we don't know anything. You know, they're hedgehog. We don't know anything. It's not our watch. And the Trump people are furious. I've been taking furious calls all morning. If it's just what we know now, what impact does it have on turnout of who votes in November?
I don't know that it necessarily has any impact, but I'll give you two scenarios. One scenario is, in theory, Republicans are more juiced to turn out. But the thing is, I've seen the numbers. They're already juiced to turn out. And there's always a risk. You know, Trump is such an unusual figure. There's always a risk that when Trump becomes the center of everything, that it juices Democrats as much as it does Republicans. You know, one of my good editors I've had over the years, Jim Antle, once told me that Trump reminded him of Brett Favre. He can play you into the game, and then on the very next play, play you right out of the game. And so I think that there are different ways to look at it. I think, look, let's say Republicans had been on defense, and it was just, you know, they had to win 40 seats, and we didn't know that they could get there. And they just weren't happy with their leadership, and I don't know, they were dispirited. It would be unusual in a cycle like this. So I suppose you could look at this and say, oh, my goodness, they just lit a fire. Now it's going to turn things around. But they were already there, Hugh. I mean, their range is already 20 to 30 House seats. Could get better on inflation and the recession alone. And even though some of these Senate races look tough, they're not going to lose Ohio, all right? They're on offense in Nevada. They still have a chance to win New Hampshire once they have a nominee. I mean, it's not like there have been all of these stories the past few days. I've written some of them because they're worth reporting about mood and accomplishment and what it might mean. Democrats have scored a lot of legislative victories. At least they're delivering for their voters, you know, their Democratic voters, capital D. And so at least they appear to be governing. But we don't know that any of this stuff's going to be popular. We don't know that it's going to fix the number one problem, inflation and the recession. And so I don't know that they've really dug themselves out of any hole in this particular cycle.
So, David, if I'm Dr. Oz, if I'm Herschel Walker, if I'm J.D. Vance, if I'm Adam Laxalt, if I'm Tiffany Smiley, if I'm Joe O'Day, and tell me if I've missed anyone, I say, imagine hiring 87,000 new IRS agents, and they do to you what the FBI just did to Donald Trump, because they have the same authority. In fact, they have greater authority because they can attach liens without judicial process. That's my argument. That's what they're going to go. The Democrats just hired 87,000 new IRS agents. They're not FBI agents. They're IRS agents, but they can do to you and your business what the FBI just did to Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago. So if the former president of the United States is subject to that, these 87,000 new IRS agents can do that to you. Does that work for Republicans as a message?
In some cases, I don't think it works in Washington State and Colorado at all. Does it work in Arizona? Maybe. I think it works in Ohio. I think it works in North Carolina.
But does it work in Pennsylvania and New Hampshire? You see, I think the cash economy in Nevada and the New Hampshire...
New Hampshire, I don't think it works. Pennsylvania, maybe.
I think it works in New Hampshire because it's the anti-tax state. I think it works in Nevada because it's the cash economy state. But we shall see. David M. Drucker on Twitter will follow this story all day long. He'll update it. Byron York is next, America. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. I'm lucky that I was talking to Lindsey Graham at 7 o'clock last night and talked to him about the raid at Mar-a-Lago. I'm lucky to have David Drucker on last hour. And now Byron York, also of the Washington Examiner. You see him on Fox News. Byron, it's been less than 12 hours since word broke.
Yep.
It's just exactly 12 hours. What's your reaction to the raid on Mar-a-Lago?
Well, you know, last night I just began to have this realization, and I thought, they raided his house over the Presidential Records Act.
I don't believe that. I just can't think that.
If you listen to commentary today on CNN, so this is kind of an anti George Conway, who is rabidly anti-Trump, said, quote, they've crossed the Rubicon here. Not even Richard Nixon's house in San Clemente was searched by the FBI, as far as I know. He said Merrick Garland doesn't do things rashly. We have to conclude that there's something behind the curtain that would surprise us. So the general commentary in the sort of anti-Trump media is there must be something big here. I mean, they wouldn't just do it over a classified document. There must be something really big, and we just don't know it. I'm not sure about that. I'm absolutely not sure about that.
Byron, I said last night to someone else that the media today are like football teams, and the coaches on the sidelines are like the RNC and the DNC. They're calling the plays and they're doing their best. I just don't believe in media commentary. They don't. I bet you that guy, George is a smart lawyer, but I bet you he hadn't read Trump v. Vance recently, the 2020 case that says, well, look, states, criminal grand juries can, in fact, subpoena a sitting president. Well, if a state grand jury can subpoena a sitting president, then the FBI most certainly can legally seize the papers. But there's a warrant, and the warrant's got to say what it's based on. And a judge
Thank
had
you
to...
very much. That's what we need to know. Now, first of all, we've seen this now with the case of Jeffrey Clark, with John Eastman, with other people who were in Trump's orbit, who were involved in the January 6th matter. They were either their homes were raided or their persons were accosted and their phones were taken. Now, I'm going to ask you, the law professor here. There is a warrant, and Trump is entitled to a copy of the warrant, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the warrant usually has the judge saying, I am giving the FBI permission to search these premises for these things based on the affidavit that I have been presented by the FBI. So there's like a one-page warrant, and then there's an underlying affidavit that gives the reasons for doing this. And the person who searched is also entitled to a copy of the affidavit, right?
Yes. And they're okay. Also entitled to some specificity in the warrant as to what may be searched.
So Trump should make these public today, shouldn't he?
Absolutely. But you know what? There's also material collected in the course of an otherwise lawful warrant, including incriminatory material. And so
right.
You get the door is pried open with the warrant on the basis, I think, just absurd basis of classified documents. By the way, I must tell you from personal experience, the archives found classified documents in the Nixon post-presidency papers at the library 3 years ago. We had a fight about that. They wanted to sequester the whole post-presidential archive. I threatened them with all sorts of mayhem, and they reduced it to 8 files, and they took them to Maryland. And I think they had to do with the president's travels to China and his memos back and forth to Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush about that.
And but we should note that Richard Nixon left office 48 years ago.
Right. Every single president has classified materials because they're president. By the way, they get briefings. Every former president gets briefings from the agency that are classified. So there's classified material by operation of standard operating procedures, right? And this president, who is particularly threatened by Iran because he killed Soleimani, has been offered classified briefings about the threat. So it is not, it is a given that there is classified material at Mar-a-Lago. All right. It's a given that he took notes on who's trying to kill him and why. It's a given that there's, so they have to detail that, but then they get it all. I want to know who gets it, who reviews it, who's going to leak it. Because the one thing we know, the thing I can say for certain, I'd love your comment, is we have a long list that begins with Brennan, Comey, and Clapper going to see him in Trump Tower before he's president, continuing through Stroke and Wasserman and Goldstein and through Adam Schiff, lying about this president. And you wrote the book, Obsession. You know what they do. I'm not buying that this is fair, neutral, and otherwise would happen to anyone who'd done what Trump had done.
Yeah. And I think maybe the pinnacle of that occurred in January 2017, before Trump became president, in which the top agencies engineered a way to get the Steele dossier into the public discussion.
Yeah, they salted the mine.
By briefing Trump on one aspect of it, the so-called P-tape aspect of it, and then leaking the fact that it had been briefed. And of course, news organizations said, wow, the nation's top intelligence chiefs are briefing the president-elect about this. It must be big. So here you have the FBI has raided Mar-a-Lago. It's done something absolutely unprecedented. So you think, or some people think, it must be big. And maybe it's not what they say it is. But I think the first step is for the president himself, the subject, the target of the search, to, one, demand the documents that he is entitled to, and two, make them public immediately. The worst thing that has happened in all of the Trump-Russia stuff was this phony secrecy that always surrounded things so that the New York Times or the Washington Post could publish little snippets of information that it had been fed by interested parties. And the speculation would began that this was just the tip of the iceberg, and it would go on and on and on until finally, years later, we found out that there was no iceberg. So what we need now is immediate publication of this stuff. And Donald Trump can actually do that, one, by demanding what he's entitled to as the target of this search, and two, making it public.
I agree, Byron. He ought to send it to you, make it exclusive. I got to tell you, I've been the longest standing, I don't believe in conspiracies, because Chuck Colson once told me they tried to do one and it lasted 3 days. You can't do a conspiracy. And Lindsey Graham on the show just made fun of the idea of Donald Trump being charged with conspiracy, because that requires a plan that you follow through on it, not his strong suit. And then off air, we're talking about you need a meeting of the minds, all this different stuff. It's absurd. It's just absurd. But Lindsey believes, and I have come to agree with him, there's a get Trump obsession, as you write about in your book, that is never going to leave the body politic until he dies. They're going to try and get Trump after he's dead. It's going to be like Al Capone safe.
And Graham, of course, is on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I think we should see, even though Charles Grassley, the ranking Republican on the committee, and Jim Jordan, the ranking Republican on the House Judiciary Committee, even though neither one is in the majority, and neither one has any power at all, they do have a pulpit, and they should be demanding the same thing that I've been talking about, which is public disclosure of this. The best thing we can get is public disclosure. If it is something serious, we need to know about it.
Byron, have you ever heard the name? Have you ever heard the name Colleen Shogan?
No.
Colleen Shogan is the vice president at the White House Historical Association that Joe Biden has nominated to be the new archivist of the United States. That's a 10-year job. Great archivist is leaving, David Ferriero. I dealt with him at the Nixon Foundation. And so a new archivist is coming in for 10 years. They have confirmation hearings for that job. John Agresta was knocked out by Charles Matthias of Maryland and Thomas Eagleton when I was his general counsel at the National Endowment for the Humanities. NARA is allegedly the moving agency here. The National Archives and Records Administration is allegedly the moving. So those confirmation hearings are a way in. But right now, whoever has oversight over NARA and whoever has oversight over this confirmation hearing has got to be asking everyone, get all your papers ready. I want to see every communication that you had with the FBI about the Classified Records Act and the Presidential Materials Act. And I want you in front of my committee to answer questions. Right? Doesn't that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we also should go back and look at the things that we do know now. For example, a man named Jason Foster, used to be a top investigator for Charles Grassley in the Senate, has been tweeting stuff this morning about the agreement between the FBI and Hillary Clinton over her service, her servers. And basically, it's some people get FBI raids and others get extensive negotiations and requests.
Oh,
and ultimately, the FBI agreed to destroy the evidence.
Good point. Yeah, every Senate candidate's going to be out there saying the Democrats just hired 87,000 IRS agents, and each one of those can do to you what the FBI just did to Donald Trump. I just think the campaign took a big turn yesterday, and Democrats don't even know it because they are, in the words of Byron York's book, obsessed. I'll be right back, America. Thank you, Byron York. Follow him on Twitter. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
See,
welcome back, America. That music means Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy, senior official at the Carlyle Group, chairman of the Rockefeller Foundation, all-around good guy and prolific author. Good morning, Admiral. How are you?
Doing great, Hugh. How's it going?
Good. I've got your colleague, Elliot Ackerman, on this week. He's got a new book out, which I haven't got yet. I don't know if you've read it. I don't know what it's about. Is it a novel or is it a nonfiction book?
Oh, it's nonfiction. It's memoir. It's called The Fifth Act, and I think it's terrific. It's about the fall of Kabul. And what Elliot does beautifully is tell the story of a group of Afghan former translators, those who worked with us, and how they're trying to get out of Afghanistan, and how Elliot, like many veterans, including myself, worked very hard to get many of these people out. It's a very moving story, and I think he also weaves in his own combat experiences in Afghanistan in a series of flashbacks. It's a complicated, wonderful book.
All right, it's waiting for me at the P.O. box. I just have to pick it up, and I will. Admiral, I want to ask you, the big story of the day is about Mar-a-Lago, and that's not your writ. I want to talk to you about the other one, which is in the Wall Street Journal that would have led the news, I think, today, but for the search of the former president's home. It's in the Wall Street Journal. It begins, as many as 80,000 Russian troops have been wounded or killed in less than 6 months of fighting in Ukraine. The Pentagon said Monday, the first time the U.S. military announced its estimate of the toll of the invasion on Russia. So your reaction to that, I know you'll have confidence in the number given its provenance, but what do you think of that?
It's unbelievable at a number of different levels, but let's start with provenance. I've said for a long time that you know the Ukrainians are going to inflate Russian casualties, and frankly, the U.S. has been very conservative in their commentary. Normally, the best source, in my view, has been British intelligence, MI6. So when you see U.S. intelligence deploy a number like that, you can bet it's extremely well sourced, point one. Point two, just recall this is not 80,000 killed in action. This is 80,000 casualties, meaning it's probably in the range of 25 to 30,000 killed in action, which is staggering. But the remainder are wounded, many grievously, but they're all knocked out of action. So if you recall that the rough number of troops Russia brought into this conflict was 200,000, they have now lost almost half of their fighting force. That's quite extraordinary. And third and final point I'll make, Hugh, is, again, what's amazing here is the speed with which this has happened in today's context. You know, you go back to World War II and you could see casualty counts like that at the Battle of Stalingrad or the Battle of Iwo Jima. But in today's context, casualties tend to stretch out over long wars. Look, we were talking about Afghanistan a moment ago. In all the war in Afghanistan and Iraq combined, U.S. had 7,000 killed in action, maybe 40 or 50,000 total casualties when you take the wounded. So to double that number, if you will, in the course of 6 months is a body blow, a shot in the heart to the Russian military.
Now, Admiral, in the United States, we are blessed to have a plethora of groups, including the Semper Fi Fund and America First Fund and many other, Fisher House, that take care, along with the VA, of the long-term wounded and those who have battle trauma and many other hidden wounds. I don't believe Russia has that infrastructure, and I don't believe Russia was prepared for this, and I don't believe Russia mothers grieve any less than American mothers do for their lost sons, and the same of wives, daughters, sons, and fathers and other relatives. This must have, if it's well known in Russia, an impact of some sort on Putin's support.
It will over time. And Putin, of course, deeply controls sources of information. But even there, and I monitor a lot of Russian sources, I look at any number of different ways of thinking about Russian public opinion. I'd say at this point, about a fourth to a third of Russia, the population, is extremely well aware of what's going on. They tap into Western sources. They know a lot of what they see is inaccurate and frankly, synthesized. But I'd say, unfortunately, Hugh, about two thirds of Russians don't tap into Western sources. They're probably not fully cognizant of what's happening. But here's the point. As you said up front, you can't hide this. You can't hide missing limbs. You can't hide the fact Ivan never came back. He's just gone from the village. That will have a ripple effect even through the parts of the population that are unwitting, if you will, of the big flick here. So I think, yes, Putin, not in this immediate moment, but over the next months and the next year or so, this is going to bleed out into the population, and it will affect his popularity.
Now, I have to ask you about Taiwan, but let me quit one closure on Putin. He's been spending a lot of time with Erdogan, a lot of NATO allies, and you were the Allied Supreme Commander of NATO for a long time. A lot of allies are worried about Turkey and the Russia dance. They used to fight all the time throughout the 19th century, and now they're dancing. What do we think of that, Admiral?
First point I always make, as Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, Turkey's military stood and delivered on every operation. You know, Afghanistan, Libya, the Balkans, piracy, highly professional, highly capable. They came when the alliance called. But as you point out, Erdogan has become closer and closer, I think personally, to President Putin, and that is very worrisome. There can be some upside to that, frankly, and look at what Erdogan was able to do in bringing Russia and Ukraine together to at least thus far create a potential solution to the grain embargo. So having a channel from the alliance to Russia is not entirely a bad thing. On the other hand, when President Erdogan decides to buy high-end Russian armaments like the S-400 anti-air system, that really worries the alliance. It's a mixed picture. I'll tell you the picture that really worried me more than Erdogan going to Moscow was Erdogan in Tehran. That was about 3 weeks ago, appearing with Vladimir Putin in Tehran. I'm more concerned about his lean toward Iran than I am about his dalliances, if you will, with Russia. I think he's smart enough to know how far he can go in both of those cases. But yeah, it'll make many in the alliance uncomfortable.
Now, Admiral, to Taiwan and China, there is an imposed narrative because we in the West think that Xi is going to wait to do anything vis-a-vis Taiwan until after he's elected to a third term. Isn't there a counter likelihood and evidence by these exercises, which are ongoing and ominous, that, hey, maybe he takes it first and fights the war now and then says to the Chinese Central Committee, you can't really change horses in midstream. You wrote 2034 with Elliot Ackerman about a hypothetical war between China and Russia, one that limited in scope, but very dangerous. What about now?
I still think, based on everything I see and having spent well over half my career in the Pacific and having visited China many times and knowing, I think, the way the Chinese think, I think they're patient and they are going to wait. I don't see an immediate concern here. The novel you mentioned, 2034, a novel of the next world war, is set in the year 2034. I think that's a more realistic point where a collision that leads to a significant war occurs. However, the decision to go to war is often unpredictable in history. It's incredibly difficult to predict when a nation will hit a tipping point and decide they want to make a move. I'll give you three reasons I think this is not that moment. You already mentioned one of them, the 20th Party Congress coming up. Don't rock the boat too much between now and then. On the other hand, you have to look strong. But I think President Xi is also asking himself, I wonder if my generals are as bad as those Russian generals appear to be. I think that actually gives him some pause. He also thinks about the level of sanctions that have been concerted and directed against Russia. He doesn't want that, particularly as his economy is sputtering and he's trying to get out from under these massive COVID lockdowns. And thirdly, he's not sure in his own mind how hard the Taiwanese will fight. And boy, if they decide to fight, go look at a map of Taiwan. It's a mountainous, forest-filled, think Finland in the south, China Sea. It can be well defended in partisan actions. There's a lot of complexity and uncertainty that I think make it more palatable to do a blockade, to shoot some missiles, to fly your jets, than it is to actually put boots on the ground on the island of Taiwan. I'd say,
Admiral, I know you're well enough read to be able to answer this on the fly, but if there is a blockade, which is being thrown around now, does the U.S. pull off the equivalent of the Berlin airlift?
I would say probably that would be a counter. If I were chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff giving military advice to the National Command Authority, the president and the secretary of defense, I would say that that an airlift that goes, if you will, over a seaborne blockade would certainly be an option. You have to recognize, of course, you're doing this in China's backyard where they have significant level of air capability as well. So what if China then countered with a no-fly zone? So you have to think a couple of steps ahead. But yes, better, Hugh, frankly, is thinking now, while there is no actual blockade, there is no no-fly zone, getting China the systems it needs to defend itself. Those, I think, are the keys right now, not visits by high-level political actors. They don't need Speaker Pelosi. They need better military capability.
What about establishing a regular conveyor belt of the big cargo airplanes full of stuff for Taiwan now so that it's interdicted by China later?
I see no problem with front-loading the kind of capability they need, things like smart sea mines that can be turned on and off, anti-ship cruise missiles that have range, and drones that can direct them, better cyber capability. One of the big things we're seeing now is a major cyber attack going on directed against Taiwan.
Yes.
Better missile defense. Those are the kind of things that, yeah, I'd put them on big planes, move them in with regularity, make the Chinese understand that's not going to stop.
Admiral James Stavridis, always a pleasure. United States Navy retired. I love talking to you, and good luck. I know you're a busy guy. I appreciate your taking the time this morning. James Stavridis, follow him on Twitter. It's Stavridis J. It's a very easy Twitter handle to find, Stavridis J. Thank you, Admiral. Cold to my affiliates in Duluth and Western Minnesota, of course, to AM 1280, the Patriot listeners in the Twin Cities. Get out and vote, and if you're anywhere near Minnesota's third, vote for Tom Weiler, who is, I've long thought, if Congress is ever going to get to the bottom of things, they need a submariner, and that is Tom Weiler. Good morning, Tom. How is your campaign going, and are people voting this morning?
Good morning, Hugh. Campaign's going great, and yeah, absolutely. It's primary day in Minnesota, so get out there and vote. Fortunately, in CD3 here, I have no Republican challengers, so we like our odds going into the primary today, and we've been focused on our general election to bring some common sense conservative leadership back to Minnesota's third district.
The reason I want Republicans to vote, especially even if you're not running against an opponent, Tom, is it gives you a sense of where you are, and it gives the National Republican Congressional Committee an indication that you've got strong support going into the general. Tell people where Minnesota's third is, who you'll be running against probably as a Democrat, and how that race shapes up what it's going to be fought on.
Absolutely. This is the western suburbs of the Twin Cities, and the incumbent right now is Congressman Dean Phillips. He attempts to portray himself as a moderate in the district, but he has a 100% voting record with the failed policies of the Biden administration. And this was a conservative district for about 30 years when I was growing up here. And just 4 years ago, it did swing to the Democrat side with Congressman Phillips. But really, he and his voting record demonstrates that he's out of alignment with the true Midwestern conservative values that are still in the district. And fundamentally, he voted to defund the police and did not take a leadership stand when Minneapolis was rioted 2 summers ago in the summer of 2020. And he's also, you know, voted yes on every spending and tax bill that the Biden administration has put forward, which has clearly contributed to the 9.1% inflation that all Minnesotans are feeling. In addition to moderate, sorry, Hugh, you know, there's a big race for governor and attorney general up here as well. And Hennepin County Attorney, all those races are incredibly important, mainly to provide the safety and security that the Twin Cities need, and also to get our economy moving in the right direction.
This spring, I moderated a debate of the five candidates for governor on the Republican side. I don't know who's going to win up there, but they'll be a good candidate. I want to ask you if you think Dean Phillips is going to vote for this so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which is really the IRS Expansion Act. If he does, he'll be voting to double the size of the IRS budget and hire 87,000 new IRS agents over 10 years. Do you think Dean Phillips is going to vote for that one as well?
Absolutely. He does not want to put a blemish on his 100% support for President Biden and Speaker Pelosi. But no, of course he will. He's been celebrating that passing the Senate already. And yeah, he's just out of touch with what real Minnesotans are feeling here in CD3. He's worth $100 million himself, so 9% inflation you know, increased taxes across all economic groups isn't going to faze him, but it's definitely going to hurt the pocketbooks of Minnesotans in the 3rd District and hurt our economy even further.
Tom Weiler, your Twitter handle is Tom Weiler MN. That's spelled Tom WEILERMN, of course, Minnesota, for the Steelers fans. What's the website for your campaign, Tom?
It's WeilerForCongress.com. Again, it's WEILER and then spelled out for Congress.com. And we just launched a new website earlier this week, you know, stepping up as we prepare for the general election. And there's plenty of information there about our campaign and how to donate and contribute to the campaign in other ways.
Tom, am I correct? There isn't another submariner in the Congress. I might be wrong about that, but I'm unaware of anyone who spent their time on attacks and boomers under the water.
No, I believe you're correct on that, Hugh. And I do think, you know, especially as we look at the competition and competitiveness with China and Russia, the submarine force, along with space and cyber, I think are really the game changers moving forward. And if the Inflation Reduction Act, of course, which will raise inflation, but if they were looking to double any agency in the U.S. government, it might be the submarine force instead of the IRS.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, Tom Weiler, in terms of, did you finish out as a commander? Are you in the reserve still, or did you finish out as a commander?
No, I retired as a commander. Got through executive officer, and then unfortunately, executive officer on the USS Michigan, and then unfortunately got diagnosed with Parkinson's disease just before my commanding officer tour. So I did not get my commanding officer tour in.
Being an XO on a submarine, attack submarine, the USS Michigan, or is that a boomer?
Actually, that was an SSGN, so a converted boomer, former boomer, and then converted to a Tomahawk platform, and we did some special operations out of her as well.
How long do tours on a either the cruise missile Ohio class or the missile Ohio class, how long are those tours under the sea?
Well, you're attached to a boat about three years. Deployments for a fast attacker are only about 6 months at a time. And then the boomers go out anywhere from 2 to 6 months, depending on where they are in their operational cycle.
Now, are they still quiet beyond quiet? Can the Chinese track them, Tom Weiler?
Well, not to get into this classified information, but I've been out of that world for a little bit now, so I can talk about what it was like when I was there 2 years ago. And fortunately for us, our technology keeps getting better and better. But yes, we definitely have the advantage under the sea right now, and we need to keep it that way. And both China in particular and Russia continue to try to improve their underwater platforms, and we need to keep our competitive advantage in that area, because that's really a game changer, like I said.
Boy, but we could use you in the Congress talking about the submarine fleet, because if there is any, I talked about it with every candidate in 2016, the need to replace the Ohio class. Okay, we've got the Columbia class on the drawing boards, but it's been pushed out, delayed, it's over budget. And there is, I don't think there's a more critical part of our nuclear deterrent than the future Columbia class, just like the Ohio class submarine currently at sea is the key to our backbone deterrent.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the number one priority for the Department of Defense is our nuclear deterrent, and the Columbia class and the Boomer class right now is the key element of that, because, of course, we're going to be sustainable and fundamentally no one knows where the Boomers are operating when they're called and when they're needed.
Now, Tom Weiler, the Minnesota 3rd is a competitive district. It was just redrawn. I don't know what the incumbent Democrat's advantage is, but he does have $100 million. You need a lot of small donations, do you not?
Absolutely. You know, going up against an incumbent, it's name ID and getting the enough resources to get our name and our message out there to the voters. And I think if we can raise that money, we'll be in great position on November 8th to return Minnesota's 3rd district back to the right side and bring some conservative Midwestern values to Washington, D.C.
I know you're working hard, as is your beautiful wife and family. I saw you at that debate. I moderated. How is the turnout? How is the enthusiasm among Minnesota Republicans and independents to toss this guy out?
I think there's a lot of momentum. You know, it's the hunt for the red November up here in Minnesota. And there's a lot of momentum. And a lot of that is just because the people in the 3rd District and throughout the Twin Cities, you know, feel the impacts of this crime wave, that was, unfortunately, Minneapolis sort of the epicenter of the defund the police and empowering and emboldening criminals almost. And that crime is spreading out to the 3rd District. And Minnesotans have had enough of that. And as well, this is a 9% inflation and $5 gas. Minnesota is looking for a change, and we're ready to turn the ship around up here in Minnesota's 3rd District.
You know, I'm about to do my ad for AndrewandTodd.com. People want to buy a house, and interest rates have gotten away from them. Do you hear from young families like your own that want to buy a house and have just been priced out by Biden inflation?
Absolutely. You know, I'm a middle class family. You know, we have just retired from the military, two little kids, and between the inflation right now and the increased interest rates, it's just a completely different dynamic than it was 5 or 10 years ago, especially for young families. And we are seeing a lot of sort of interest, more interest than normal from young voters, and really the young Republican voters in particular. There's definitely a surge that we haven't seen up here in the last couple of cycles.
Last question, Tom Weiler. Last night, the FBI raided President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. How much does Trump come up on the campaign trail, and do you expect to be answering questions about that today?
It pops up, you know, typically from the media individuals in the media, you know, trying to focus on the past and not the future. It definitely doesn't pop up from the constituents in Minnesota that I've spoken with. Like I said, they're worried about crime, they're worried about education, and they're worried about their family's financial future.
Tom Weiler, thank you for joining me. Weiler for Congress, Weilerfor, congress.com.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.